The Honorable Arno Denecke, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the State of Oregon, will now administer the oath of office to the Honorable Victor Atiyah, Governor-elect of the State of Oregon.
You place your right hand on the Bible, please, and repeat after me. I, state your name.
I, Victor Atiyah.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the State of Oregon.
Constitution of the State of Oregon.
And that I will faithfully discharge.
And that I will faithfully discharge.
The duties of Governor of the State of Oregon.
The duties of Governor of the State of Oregon.
According to the best of my ability.
According to the best of my ability.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Governor.
We will now hear the inaugural address of the Honorable Victor Atiyah, newly sworn in official Governor of the State of Oregon. Governor Atiyah.
Thank you all. President, Mr. Speaker, Governor Straub and Governor McCall, members of the 60th Legislative Assembly, distinguished elected officials, fellow Oregonians. 4 years ago, we welcomed to this chamber the man who had defeated me for the office he occupied. 8 weeks ago, he welcomed me to that office, the oath for which I've just taken. Bob Straub, for the extraordinary cooperation of your staff in the recent transition, but more, for your many years of dedicated service to this state, I say on behalf of myself, my staff, and the people of Oregon, all of us, thank you and Godspeed. On a personal note, I share this day with many, many others, but most of all with my family, and especially the one who's been along on every hill and valley of the way, my wife, Dolores. It's a beautiful day in Oregon. The greatest day of my life, and it could be a great day for all of you who share with me the highest honor, the greatest responsibility that our fellow Oregonians can confer, the stewardship of their system of law. In the months ahead, you as legislators will be faced with thousands of decisions, thousands of judgments on how we in Oregon should live our lives. As only recently, one of you, I know how easy it is to view the legislative agenda as a kaleidoscope, tumbling fragments of varying shapes and colors, each bearing little or no relation to the other. A vote on energy may follow a hearing on criminal justice. A meeting with farmers may follow a debate on municipal bonding. In this kaleidoscope, a unity of design, a consistency of principle, is very elusive. I have previously offered you, and in the days ahead will continue to present to you, specific legislative proposals. But today, before you take up one by one the many concerns and demands that will be pressed upon you, I ask you to step back a moment and consider some fundamental harmonizing principles which I believe should guide us all in what we do. For 20 years in public service, I have heard Oregonians talking. I've heard the voices of different ages, different races, different stations, and different convictions. But the more I listen, the more the voices blend into one. A true common voice of the people of Oregon expressing common concerns. As I've listened in recent years, I've heard that voice rise to an anguished scream of anger, a cry of frustration at promises broken and a government becoming more remote. Almost two centuries ago, Thomas Jefferson cautioned us that the only safe depository of the ultimate powers of society is in the people themselves. But today, our people feel that power, the power to govern themselves, not only slipping from their hands, but in some cases being deliberately snatched from them. Oregonians, like their fellow Americans, see a government becoming increasingly preoccupied with the form of government rather than its substance. Where they've asked for justice, for opportunity, for security, and for health, they've been given departments, commissions, and bureaus bearing those names. Too often their cries have been smothered under a crust of elitists in government who cogitate, regulate, and promulgate from behind soundproof walls. Where once our people asked government to stand by their side, today they ask government simply to stand aside. The cardinal sin of government in our time has been an arrogant assumption that all wisdom resides in it, and the conceit that government can dictate its people's wants. It has been well said that government is the art of the possible, and I say to you that it is possible for a government to act effectively only where it acts in harmony with its people. Where it acts in discord, government invites rebellious backlash and, perhaps worse, the terrible silent apathy. The plain fact is that given the light to see the truth, our people will decide their destinies better than any elite, elected or not. Therefore, in the business of government, we should ask first, what do our people want? What are their goals, their priorities? Then we should ask if the devices we set in motion truly serve the desires of the people. An employment division should help people find jobs. A department of education should help education, and a commission on aging should help make aging a time of tranquility, not a time of fear and uncertainty. Those are fundamental goals of our people. And we must honor them over the efforts of some to make our agencies an end in themselves, and over the efforts of others to make public agencies serve the goals of only a few. Where our people ask for protection, let us protect them. Where they ask for assistance, let's assist them. And where they ask simply to be left alone, let us leave them alone. As I urge you to listen to our people, I promise to lead by example. I have and will continue to listen. And not just to those people who have the means and the urgency to press their case in Salem. I will go to our people to listen. I will go to every county in this state. I will be in your own communities. Not talking to you, but meeting with you. I will establish listening posts in every area of the state, from the towns of eastern Oregon to the districts of our cities, where people can gather together as often as they need to express their concerns to people who will talk directly to me. I will listen to you, the elected representatives of our people, and to the many dedicated workers in our government who truly want to serve people. I will listen to all. Let no one think, however, that when you and I promise to listen, we abdicate our responsibility. No one wants the hard choices of government to be made solely on the basis of the latest opinion poll or on the basis of which group can put the loudest crowd on the Capitol steps. We will listen to our people, all our people, to hear their true goals, the common objectives that survive the passions of the moment. But the responsibility rests with us to find the best way to achieve these goals. It is for us to sort through the maze of arguments and evidence to decide how best to honor the call for justice, security, and opportunity. Simply put, our message to Oregonians is this: set us the task, and we will choose the tools. If there's one task above all that our people have set for us, now it is this: we must arrest the vicious cycle of increased government spending and increased taxation. As the burden of taxation rises, individual freedom of choice declines. Choices as to housing, education, and even health care are restricted more and more as the tax collector leaves less and less. That must not continue. Let us be clear on one point. Oregonians are not calling for tax relief because they're selfish. To the contrary, ours is a generous people. Oregonians have supported ballot measures which committed their funds and their credit to care for the elderly, to house veterans, to improve education, and to fight pollution. The call for tax relief is not a mandate to close our hearts. It is a mandate to open our eyes to spending which is wasteful, spending which is unnecessary, and most of all, spending which ignores the goals and priorities of our people. Again, we must look to the people to chart our course. They want their dollars spent wisely, and they want their dollars to reach the target. Where we appropriate money for child care, they want maximum value in terms of care for children, not office furniture for officials. That is their message, and I pledge myself to do my best to see that their dollars reach the target. One way to ensure that a government spends wisely is to compel it to spend less. In terms of real dollars, that is what I propose to do. I've submitted to this legislature a 2-year budget which keeps faith with President's guidelines. Because of steadily rising costs, this will mean cuts, and we'll make them. However, I firmly believe that we can streamline the operations of government without reducing its real service to people. That will be our goal. That will be the acid test of our credibility. And this, I ask for your support. Having now spoken of some things I believe our people expect of government, I would like to share with my fellow Oregonians some expectations I have for them. The increasing role of government in our lives has been a temptation to abandon our sense of community. Instead of caring for one another, we hire government to do the job. Aging parents who gave us love must turn in their need to social workers. Children who need firm hands on their shoulders are committed to the custody of the courts. Our tax dollars have too often been used to buy escape from personal responsibility, and we are the poorer for it. When we trade the joy of helping others for the anonymous exercise of paying taxes to buy social services, we, all of us, are the losers. My friends, government can do many things, but it cannot hire love. I ask the people of Oregon, I challenge you, to back your demands for less government and less taxes with a commitment to do for each other, in person, much of what we've been asking government to do for us. We've heard too much about doing your own thing and looking out for number one. If there ever was a me-first decade, let it end in Oregon. I ask you to reach out to one another, to give of your time, your talents, and your energies. Instead of hiring more policemen, let us work with young people in churches and youth groups, in athletics and schools, and with the families to give them feelings of self-esteem, achievement, and warmth. Instead of buying places of confinement for our elderly and our mentally handicapped, let us give them the help they need to live among us. David Ben-Gurion once said, "The true right to a country springs not from political or government authority, but from work." I believe that. I believe in working together. Thousands of your fellow citizens are already on the job. If you want to help, churches, synagogues, and neighborhood associations can point the way. Your community may have a volunteer bureau. You can even look in the yellow pages under social service organizations. I ask you to do this not only for others, but for yourself. I remember a few years ago, one of the fulfilling days of my life, I was working as a volunteer for the Boy Scouts. My assignment was to dig a drainage ditch in the pouring rain. I wouldn't have done that for pay, but you couldn't buy back from me the feeling of satisfaction I got from that job. Again, we will try to lead by example. This government will soon announce a policy which will encourage and assist state employees to participate in the volunteer efforts of their communities. We in the governor's office will make special efforts to provide recognition for individual and group volunteer achievements. I will also ask every employer in this state, large and small, to follow that lead, to recognize and facilitate community service. If all the people of Oregon can take to their hearts the age-old concept of volunteerism, we can reduce the need for government intervention and tax support. We can improve the quality of life in Oregon, and we will grow as a community. And now some thoughts about this great state of ours. The Oregon story is not new. It is not the creation of our generation. There are around us in the halls of this Capitol the names of 158 people who helped build this state. Samuel Barlow and Joel Palmer challenged the elements to build a legendary road across Mount Hood. Abigail Scott Duniway challenged the deep-seated prejudices of her time to fight for women's rights over a century ago. Some of the 158 were founders of cities, governments, and businesses. Some blazed trails. Some just survived. But they all did something. Their legacy is a people who are hardworking and hard-headed, compassionate but demanding, self-respecting and self-reliant, and dedicated to the common good and to common sense. Oregonians are a special people in a special place. Some of our people begin and end the day in towers of glass and steel. Others ride on horseback amid the same vistas that enchanted the American Indian and our early pioneers. Oregonians are as varied in their ideas as in their backgrounds, going our separate ways in politics, religion, and lifestyles. We cherish the freedom to go our separate ways. Let it always be that way. But let us go our separate ways together. Together in our faith in ourselves, our faith in each other, our faith in the destiny of our great state, and our faith in the one who gave us this land of beauty, opportunity, and promise. At this beginning, this constitutional second Monday of each odd-numbered year, we must seize the exciting opportunity given to us. Let it begin with a promise and a challenge, a personal promise of my own to you, to set a high standard of performance for myself as governor in all that I do, and a challenge to you and to all Oregonians to match, or better yet, exceed that standard. Embrace this moment. Remember it. A time like this may never come your way again.
Thank you, Governor Atiyah, for the inspiring address. The Forest Grove High School, again directed by Rod Rasmus, will now sing the Battle Hymn of the Republic. want to express a very special thank you to the director, Mr. Rasmus, the accompanist, and the members of the choir from the Forest Grove High School for the marvelous part they have played in our ceremonies today. Thank you very much. The benediction will now be given by the Rabbi Yonah H. Geller, Congregation Sheri Torah.
This is the day the Lord hath made. Let us rejoice and be glad therein. O Lord our God, source of all blessings, as we bring to a conclusion this historic moment, let us turn to thee in prayer. We have gathered this day to participate in the formal inauguration of Victor Atiyah to the highest office in this state as governor of the state of Oregon. In a very trying and precarious period in contemporary history, when the people of this state are in urgent need of conscientious, sincere, and devoted leadership, when the burden of this office is heavy and the responsibilities manifold, the people of this state have seen fit to bestow upon him the mantle of leadership. We pray thee, O Lord our God, fortify him who stands this day before us. Bless him and his family. Grant unto him clarity of mind, strength of body, and profound insight, that he may better serve thee and serve mankind. Imbue him with a spirit of knowledge and wisdom, zeal and courage, forthrightness, and love of justice and truth. In his daily pursuits of this high office, may he characterize the spirit of the ancient prophet, combining the attributes of fearlessness with faith in all of his endeavors. May he, by his personal example of personal integrity, influence and lead others towards righteous and exalted conduct. We also ask thy benediction upon Robert W. Straub, a honest, dedicated, and noble man. May he and his family find fulfillment and success in all of their future endeavors. May you bless, O Lord, the co-partnership of Governor Atiyah and the Oregon Legislature with fruitful and lasting achievements. Together may they make Oregon the best governed state in the Union, and may they together grow from strength into greater strength in the service of God, man, and nation. May the favor of the Lord rest upon them, and may he bless the work of their hands. Yea, bless indeed the work of their hands. Amen.
I would now like to ask all of our guests assembled here to please remain seated until our distinguished guests have been escorted and retired from the House chamber. During this time, the recessional selections will be played by Mrs. Margaret Black on the organ. I would now ask the Senators Jernstedt and Groner and Representatives Hanneman and Wilhelms to now escort Governor and Mrs. Atiyah from the House chambers.
Rick does a good speech.
Representatives Myers and Fadeley and Senators Hannon and Eisen will now escort former Governor Trump.
Representative Hardy.
Speaker.
Hardy Myers.
Democrats will caucus at 2:30.
2:30, Democratic caucus. Any other announcements? Mr. Hanneman.
Move the House adjourn until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning.
The motion is for adjournment until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We're adjourned. I thank you all for coming. I am particularly be careful driving home today.